We're getting some really interesting emails and messages from listeners regarding military sightings, USOs, things of that sort. I got one from a listener in Honolulu who says, "I was a computer engineer on board a NASA Apollo tracking ship when a USO came up next to our ship. We at first thought it was a Russian sub until it broke the surface and flew away very fast into outer space. The craft was much larger than our ship." So obviously that was not Russian. That was not any kind of a known craft at all. I got a feeling we're going to get a couple of calls like that when we open up the phone lines right after this with my guest Preston Dennett here on Coast to Coast AM. In his new book, UFOs Over Nevada, Preston Dennett not only has several military-type encounters and cases, but a couple of really strange ones, one being a reptilian encounter involving a lady named Sherry Hinkle that I sort of know, and another involving what's described as cat people. And we're going to get to those in a bit, but we're going to go to the phone lines first. A lot of folks hanging on. I know Don in San Diego, California, has some military-related stories. Hey, Don, thanks for joining us.
Glad to be here.
Tell us your tale.
Back around 1973, I was going to go visit my sister in Oregon, and I drove up the coast, and up north of San Francisco, I picked up a couple of hitchhikers. One was a girl with a couple of dogs, and the other guy had just gotten off of a Navy sub, a sub that they were supposed to retire it. I can't remember the name of it, but it was something like the Nautilus or the Polaris or something like that. It was an early nuke sub. And he was telling me all these stories. And then he told me that he was the sonar guy, and they had some kind of multiple sonar thing where they could actually see images. And he wasn't supposed to tell me. I found out that later. But he said that they tracked something that was doing like between 100 and 300 knots, really deep. And that I said, well, couldn't that have been a fish or something passing close by? And he said, no, it was metal, and they could see the shape of it. And you know, it was definitely not something we built, so he thought it was from somewhere else. And should I tell you about the
yes.
reactor vessel thing?
Yes.
This was pretty weird. He said that the nuclear engineer was also a biologist, and he grew magic mushrooms and weed near the reactor vessel, and nobody else could go in there unless they had a degree or had the engineering status that he did. And they would go harvest this stuff once a month. So I don't know if that affected the story or not, but I thought that was pretty weird.
Well, I'm not sure I'm encouraged by that the guys in a nuclear submarine with nuclear weapons are taking mushrooms. So
well, they test people these days though.
Yeah.
Randomly. So, anyway, when he got out of the sub, he said, or when he got out of the Volkswagen, when he got to his destination, he said something like, whatever the name of the sub was, like, the Nautilus takes care of its own. And, oh, and I had a tape recorder with me, one of those old reel-to-reel tapes. And I know I still have that tape somewhere. If I could find it, I could send it to you.
Yeah, you should either send it to me or send it to Preston. That would be great.
It might take forever to find it. I also had another story about, I worked at a graphics arts place in Northridge, and we worked on a lot of different military, Lockheed, Rocketdyne, Litton, things like that, and Hughes. And one night I was working, my job was at night to fan fold these blueprint documents, and one time the old guy that was running the blueprint machine put this big sign up that said eyes only and had a rotating light. And, you know, I realized it was a secret. I didn't have any clearance, but they were shorthanded. So I'm fan folding this thing, wondering what it was. And it's from Hughes Summa Corporation. And in the center of this, it was a wiring diagram. And in the center of this thing, it said anti-gravity chamber. And I picked up the blueprint and walked back to the old guy and showed it to him. And he came unglued, screaming at me, "You didn't see this, put that back. What are you trying to get me fired or something?" You know? And it shook me. And I was, at the time, I was in college taking physics classes. And so I sat there and stared at that thing, trying to memorize some of it. And I went and told my physics professor about it. And he said, "Oh, it's probably just a vomit comet." But I don't think Hughes was manufacturing that plane. So
Wow. Well, I know there are some documents that say that Hughes was working on anti-gravity stuff at some point, and then it all kind of vanished. So Summa Corporation, by the way, Don, was the company that owned my TV station when I first got into the business. I
Well,
appreciate
that
you.
was after Hughes sold off all its holdings except for the
Right.
medical and the aircraft parts and stuff,
Right.
right?
Well, thank you for sharing the story. Appreciate it. And if you ever find that tape, drop me a note or I'll send it along to Preston.
Okay, cool.
All right.
All right,
Thanks.
thanks.
All right. Wildcard line, Jeff in Culver City. Hi, Jeff. Always good to hear from you. You're on with Preston Dennett.
Yeah, how you doing, George and Mr. Dennett? Wow, I'm glad you're continuing where Dave Schrader left off last night. But George, early in the show, you mentioned what if Ferrari designed UFOs, and that got me to thinking about the various designs of some of the UFOs that people have been seeing. You know, some are elongated tube-like crafts, some are oval-shaped, some are like giant tops, and others are shaped like curved boomerangs or giant caterpillars. You know, the enormous size of these crafts have been designed for obvious transport purposes, and this is what I'd like to ask Mr. Dennett. If these gigantic crafts are meant to transport humans from Earth, do you believe that it would be for, say, an extreme emergency like a nuclear attack? And given the various designs and mechanical functions, do you believe that they're coming from different planetary regions in space, or just one or two like the Moon or Mars? And I'll take your answer off the air.
Right. Yeah. No, that's a great question. It's one of the things that's always puzzled me about UFO research is the many different types of UFOs seen. There's just not one type of UFO that you can recognize. I mean, there's just a multitude. And I think, yeah, that we are looking at different species, at least three or four major ones. And I think that you're right, they do have different purposes as far as them being used to transport humans. But we know this is happening with abductions. And people have reported being taken from small craft into larger mother ships and undergoing experiences there. So that's pretty commonly reported. As far as from disasters, you know, I don't know if they're going to save us from ourselves or not, but I have to tell you, I do have one lady who contacted me who had a really impressive case where she was had an experience where she was taken on board and helped this UFO rescue people from a volcanic eruption, which turned out to be down in Colombia. She woke up the next day and it was all over the news and pretty much matched what she experienced with these people being overcome by a wall of mud and debris, and this UFO rescued a bunch of them. So I think, yeah, it could happen. I'm not sure. But
Thanks, Jeff.
And not.
Thanks, Jeff, for the call. You had a weird story in the book. Maybe take a minute and tell us about Sherry Hinkle. She had a reptilian encounter, I guess, in a cave while hiking with her son.
Yeah, this is, you know, I don't run across a lot of reptilian encounters, and these are apparently very tall, alien creatures who come from underground, not necessarily another planet. They're certainly not human. And in this case, her children or her son and his friend were hiking around in the area near her home where there are these caves and ran into this underground cave where they heard strange sounds and sounds of machinery and voices and came upon this weird iron rod, which they picked up and took. And this is apparently what caused a reptilian to chase them all the way home and stalk them for an entire evening. This was a creature that was seen not only by the kids, but by the mother as well, looking in the window at night in their home. So it's a pretty impressive case.
Yeah, I mean, it's a wild-sounding story, except for it has a whole bunch of witnesses.
Right, and it's hard to say what to make of it, except you know, with all these different witnesses reporting the same thing, it's hard to ignore. And certainly, she's entirely sincere about it. And there's a number of different people who have reported activity in this area. But yeah, she described this thing as being at least 7 feet tall, which she was able to judge, you know, from how she saw it through the window. And they ended up returning this iron rod or whatever it was to it, and that pretty much stopped the encounter.
East of the Rockies, Mark in Baltimore. You're on with Preston Dennett. Good morning, Mark.
Oh, thank you for taking my telephone call. I appreciate
Sure.
that very much.
Sure. What's on your mind?
I'd like to know, it's about the Gulf Breeze sightings, because after I read that book, I wrote to Ed Walters, because he has address in there, and then he wrote me back. And then also at the same time, I was living in New Jersey, and I read the book by Ellen Crystal about the Pine Bush sightings, and I wrote to her, too. and she kind of like was skeptical about photographs because she said that Jeff Bolch Laboratory claimed that you couldn't get photographs that clear. Then I went back to some of my old UFO books, which I think I've been collecting for about 40 years, and I went to back to one of the old Donald Kehoe books, and there's a chart in that book, and it's got a picture of these are like diagrams, and it has a picture of one that strangely has a strange similar resemblance to the Gulf Breeze UFO. So my question is, has the final jury been out on that case, the Gulf Breeze case?
I'll let Preston take a crack at it if you want to, and then I'll join in. Preston, are you familiar with Gulf Breeze enough to issue a judgment on it?
Oh, well, I've certainly talked to some people who've seen stuff there. I'm a huge believer. I think the Gulf Breeze case really became popular with Ed Walters when he came forward with his photographs that were published in the Gulf Breeze Sentinel newspaper there. And yeah, they had a huge wave of sightings, almost 20 years, I think, now, back in the 90s. And very impressive, an enormous number of witnesses. And the case certainly doesn't rest on Ed Walters alone. I know his case kind of polarized the UFO community a little bit because he had some really amazing photographs that were really stood out.
Yeah, he had photos that were too good to be true. And then sort of set it off for me is that they found a model in his house after he moved out. And it was pretty clear that someone was trying to discredit him. They had made this model that looked kind of like the craft in his photos, left it in his attic, and oops, somebody just kind of discovered it. It was pretty clearly a disinformation thing to kind of cast doubt on him, and it had all the fingerprints of an intelligence operation. The fact is that Ed Walters wasn't the only one to see it. As you mentioned, there were hundreds of witnesses over a period of a couple of years that were seeing these things. It wasn't just him. So I think whoever is in charge of muddying the waters did kind of a good job on it. But in reality, I think, Mark, in answer to your question, I think that was a legitimate case. Thanks for the call. We're going to go to our international line. Rob in Vancouver is calling in with a question for Preston Dennett. Hi, Rob.
Hi, how you doing today?
Okay.
Great. I'll give you a quick story. And the question is kind of looking at incidents where information is not quite directed, the story will explain it, not quite directed at a UFO sighting, but implied. For example, quick story. I live in Vancouver. My mother lives in Nanaimo, which is on Vancouver Island. I went about 6 weeks ago to go visit her, and we're talking at dinner, and I was complaining about all the helicopters that are flying around Vancouver for movie shooting. And then she said, well, you think that's bad? She goes, well, a couple of weeks ago, we had all these helicopters in the sky and these planes flying around. So I asked her what it was about. And she goes, I was on my deck and, there was a light out there in the sky. And it was there for a couple of minutes. And then, it flew away really quickly. And then all of a sudden, these jets, started flying in. And then maybe 20 helicopters came flying across the sky really low. And I was perplexed. I said, well, I'm still out there. Is it a UFO? She goes, what do you mean a UFO? What is that? What's a UFO? She goes, I don't know. It was just a light. These older school, my mom's 80 plus Italian. And she said, well, no, lots of my friends saw this. So the next evening I went to this Italian community club and, with 120 plus people there and, to kind of bolster her story, she was introducing me to people and saying, oh, no, here, to tell Rob about the light and so on. And there must have been 40, 50 people there that all saw the light. Now, being older and not really understanding or thinking about UFOs, they were mad at the helicopters and the planes, flying around, waking everybody up in the middle of the night. But they all saw the light. They didn't really care. The funny thing is they didn't really care about what the light was. They were just mad at all these helicopters. And then some of the older guys there who, in construction contracting told me that there's a big U.S. Air Force base on Vancouver Island. And so what are you talking about? It's Canada. There can't be a big U.S. Air Force base. And it ends up, you know, some of these guys are big contractors. They do construction, heavy concrete, and so on. And I mean, I met, 15-plus individuals that are all like, no, I mean, we've all go do work there. We've been doing work there for 20 years. So it is interesting in that, you know, here's a, I would say, is a UFO sighting. You know, I asked them, is that, you think the light's a UFO? They don't know what I'm talking about, or they think I'm ridiculous. You know, and here they are, complaining about all this activity from, this Air Force base, which isn't supposed to be there. So I don't know if you get like anecdotal type sightings where, you know, people don't claim this is a UFO, but there's all this, you know, stuff in the background that really makes it look like a sighting.
Well, Rob, I think that was a big story. I'm surprised media wouldn't catch on to it up there in Vancouver if they can figure out that there's an airbase there that shouldn't be there. But anecdotal stories, when you add them all up, it counts for something. Preston, your reaction to what we just heard?
Oh, yeah. You know, it sounds like this is the sort of thing that's going on a lot that we don't hear about because, you know, it just doesn't reach the point where the media is covering this stuff. And, again, most people aren't reporting their sightings in an official capacity. But, yeah.
Thanks.
Sounds like something I've heard before.
Rob, thanks for the call. We'll go back to the phone lines in a second. I don't want to get into a call and we don't have enough time before the break. I wanted to share an email that came to me. I'm going to have to disguise the guy's name because he says he had to sign a secrecy form in the service. We all had to sign them, but he tells us this story that he wanted to call in. It's a Navy story, occurred in the 70s while he was flying ASW, anti-sub warfare, in a patrol squadron out of Moffett, Naval Air Station Moffett in Mountain View, California. He says, during a deployment in Kadena, Okinawa, a USO was tracked, traveling nearly 200 knots in the Pacific Ocean at a depth of only 400 feet. The USO lost the crew, and that really made no sense unless the USO was able to perform a sharp degree angle turn. It's assumed the USO had done just that. All crew members are subject to severe punishment because we signed a secrecy form. So that's the kind of story that, Preston, you're looking for, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's incredible. This is exactly the kind of cases we keep running across where these very large objects are moving at very high speeds, and they're not ours.
Do you have those sharp angle turns like that underwater? Is that pretty rare?
That's pretty rare, you know, because a lot of people see this stuff coming towards them. It hovers under their boat, and this is when they realize that these objects are much larger, you know, than their boats. But no, not a whole lot of right angle turns and things like this, or, you know, very deep ones. Most of the people who report seeing this stuff, of course, the UFOs are, you know, only maybe 50, 100 feet down, 200.
Well, you do have some right angle turns that happen in midair. Maybe we'll get to a couple of those in your book, UFOs Over Nevada, some pretty spectacular cases. And we'll get to as many as we can and take a few more phone calls. We have one segment remaining with my guest, Preston Dennett. A lot of people on the phones with questions or stories to tell. We'll get to as many as we can right after this on Coast to Coast AM. Final segment with my guest, Preston Dennett. We're talking mostly about his book, UFOs Over Nevada, which is pretty good stuff, but he's got UFOs over California, New York, New Mexico, and a little something for everyone there. We're going back to the phone lines. First-time caller, Steve in Dayton, Ohio, home to Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Steve, you're on with Preston Dennett.
Hi, how are you today?
Hi, welcome to the program.
Yeah, back in, let's see, it was 1981, 82, 83, right in there somewhere. You can even look up the Dayton Daily newspaper. I'm sure they have this recorded. It was in the newspaper that there was a round ball of light that come down over Dayton, Ohio, about 9, 10 o'clock at night, and it was emitting some shower sparks. And when it came down, it flew over the river down here by the Marine Police Station, Marine City Police Station, and the police tried to follow it. They lost it. And this girl, the young girl, looked out her back window and saw it land in the elementary school parking lot. And she didn't tell nobody about it until like 20 years later. This I heard her on a radio station down in Cincinnati. They were talking about UFOs back in, I think it was 2004 or 2006, something like that. And I thought, well, that happened 20 years ago. She's talking about that ball of light that come down. I read it in the Dayton Daily newspaper about the Marine police seeing it. And I said, nobody ever interviewed her or talked to her about it. And I was sitting there like flipping out because I remembered the story. And I just wondered why nobody, you know, ever tried to find out, you know, if anybody actually seen the land, because the police said in the newspaper, when I was reading the newspaper article, that they lost it. They couldn't find it. They know it went somewhere, and they weren't sure where it went. But you can look up the Dayton Daily newspaper, maybe in 82, 83, right in there somewhere. They might have it on file somewhere.
Well, I know how I would answer it, but we'll let Preston take the first crack at it. Why somebody didn't track her down and interview her. Preston, what's your thoughts?
Well, you know, a lot of these cases are overlooked because we just don't have the resources and the investigators to go out and search for these things. Landing cases are particularly good cases. They're much better, of course, than sightings, or and don't have the controversy surrounding abductions and things like this. So they're really prime cases to investigate. It's a shame that one wasn't followed up, but yeah, it's a huge problem in the whole UFO field.
And in general, and Preston, you make this point in your book, UFOs Over Nevada, if you call the military, they don't investigate it. They'll tell you, we don't investigate UFOs. That stopped with Project Blue Book, which, you know, who knows if they really do or not. And if you call the police, they're not going to do anything. They don't care about that. They care about robberies and murders. They might keep you on the phone long enough to figure out if you're crazy or not, or a danger to society, but they're not going to chase UFOs. And ufologists, it's hit or miss. You know, if they hear about a case, they might try to track it down, but it's really, you know, it's like flipping a coin. So, yeah, it's a really intriguing case, Steve, but there's all kinds of reasons why it wouldn't get investigated. If you find any more information on it, send me an email. I'd be curious to learn a little bit more. And thank you for calling in. We're going to go to Anthony in Lancaster, California, on the Wild Card Line. Hi, Anthony. You're on with Preston Dennett.
Hey there, George. Hey there.
Preston.
Hey, Anthony. Hello?
Hello. We're on.
Oh, I'm sorry. Okay. Yeah, I'm actually out in California City, right at the fringe of Edwards Air Force Base. What I wanted to mention was, I've been told that when I was about 2 years old, I was going on three, in 1962, I witnessed a huge UFO display, just don't remember it, during a July 4th celebration, and everybody's got their heads to the sky watching the rockets when a swarm of UFOs appear over Los Angeles, California. Supposedly thousands of people reported these things.
What year was that?
I was just a baby, so.
So what year?
I think it was 63, July 4, 63.
Would it have made the newspaper accounts, or you don't know?
I believe it was reported in the Herald, yeah.
You know, Anthony, it would be an interesting exercise for you to do a hypnotic regression to see if that memory could be retrieved. I don't know how that works for people that young, whether it's even possible, but it'd be an interesting...
I've got another doozy, probably associated with the base out here, something I saw that was, it was just bizarre. It was something flying, it was unidentifiable, but it was really bizarre.
Well, tell it.
Okay. I was watching, I was inside, and I heard this plane buzzing around outside. That's how it always starts. And I got big binoculars. I'm an amateur astronomer. And there's this red Cessna, nothing peculiar about it, except for that it's rather boxy, cargo-y looking, not thin and tapered like a normal Cessna. And it's flying around doing all this stuff. And there's a helicopter hovering about, 500 feet off the ground. Black helicopter, of course. And it looks like it has a gondola designed for filming, like commercials or something like that, aerial photography. So I think nothing of it. And I'm watching this Cessna do its little business out in airspace in front of my house, and I'm watching it climb away from me and bank away from me with my big 15-power binoculars. And as it banks away to the left, behind it, I see a thing, honest to goodness, looks like a Campbell soup can. And it starts pumping up and down like a piston. Couple hundred times a minute. I mean, it's really going fast. I don't know anybody could be inside of it and live. Nonetheless, I just think, and I look away, and my eyes have got me playing tricks on me. I look at something else. No, my eyes aren't buzzing. I look back up, it's gone. Then months later, I realize that the black helicopter was an Apache, which is an Apache helicopter, and guys who film commercials don't usually pony up the, what is it, $10 million for an Apache. For them, I don't think the government sells them to commercial making people.
You know what, Anthony, we're going to have to all pitch in and get you a video camera. If you live on the edge of Edwards Air Force Base, you need to have something ready to go to record.
I've seen disappearing F-15s and all kinds of crazy stuff.
Well, as Preston can tell us, Edwards has quite a legacy in the UFO field. I mean, it has a long and varied history, right?
Yeah, it sure does.
Thank you, Anthony, for the call. We'll let Preston take a stab at this. I mean, there's a lot of cases, a lot of stories. This is where, I think, isn't it where Eisenhower supposedly met with aliens?
Right. There's, you know, Edwards Air Force Base is a huge magnet. Not only sightings, there's landings that have taken place there. It was verified by astronaut Gordon Cooper, who saw a film taken of one there. There's reports of this base going underground, several stories, and ETs working with humans. So, it's a neck-deep situation there with the whole president meeting with the ETs as well. It's quite a story.
And, of course, Edwards is linked in many different ways to Area 51. A lot of the stuff that goes on here in Nevada ends up there and vice versa. So I appreciate the call, Anthony. Cornelius in Louisiana, good morning. You're on with Preston Dennett.
Good morning, Preston and George. It's been a while.
Yeah,
I listen to y'all on 970 AM here in Alexandria, Louisiana, and thank you, Ms. Trish. What I wanted to ask, we have Fort Polk, Louisiana, which is in Leesville, and Barksdale Air Force Base, which is a SAC base in Shreveport. Have you done anything with Louisiana, and we've seen any UFOs over here, and have you covered, like, UFOs in the Bible? And I'll take my answer off the air. Thank you, gentlemen. God bless you.
Thanks. So is that a future book, Preston, or is there enough activity in Louisiana, or do you know?
I'm sure there is. You know, this is what I'm discovering, that there's activity in each state. It surprised me to find that there are UFO crashes pretty much in each state that I've investigated so far. And other authors are picking up, you know, the torch and writing stories about their states. So it's only a matter of time before we have, you know, basic history books for the UFO activity over each state, which is, you know, a really important step, I think, in dealing with this whole UFO phenomena and the eroding UFO cover-up and the changing whole UFO situation in general.
You know, in this program, we've concentrated mostly on just the UFO stuff, but you cover a lot of other topics, paranormal topics, ghost-type topics, weird stuff. Do you find that, you think of there are hot spots that here and there in different states, Skinwalker Ranch that I've written about before. Do you find that if you look hard enough, every place is a hot spot?
Yeah, to a certain extent, I think that's true. And a single publicized sighting can inspire other people to report what they saw, and it can be a sort of an artificially induced hot spot just through a sort of a angle of publicity. So it's hard to say which cases are active. I know that which areas are more active than others, but the UFO reporting services are getting reports on a daily basis from all different kinds of areas. So we know that this is occurring. If it's one or two over each state, well, that's 100 each night, and it's likely a lot more than that. So I think we have a situation where it's very active everywhere. It's just very discreet.
And are you sort of dialed into the UFO reporting services? You like check them in the morning, like somebody would check their email?
Well, no, not exactly. You know, I do have some Google alerts for, you know, UFOs and things like this, because I do like to keep active on what's going on, and I do like to absolutely check up on what's going on in terms of UFO activity, because we know there's a big sighting coming up soon that's going to hit the mainstream media.
What? What's this? What?
Oh, yeah, it happens once every couple of years, and it's been a while. I mean, we had Stevensville, I think, was the last really huge one. But there's going to be another one like that, another Phoenix Lights-type thing, or Gulf Breeze, or Hudson Valley, or what have you. They're not going away. We know that.
Well, I agree. We're overdue for a big one. I'm hoping it's over Las Vegas here. We're going to go to John at Oklahoma City. Hi, John, east of the Rockies. You're on with Preston Dennett.
Yeah, I'm here.
Howdy.
Thank you. Thank you for taking my call, gentlemen. I lived in Vegas in about 1994, and I remember my son was less than a year old. We just moved there. I was in a hotel room, and I was watching the news, and it was one of the Air Force bases that there was a, they said maybe a vehicle or a UFO. They didn't know what it was. It was a sighting of some kind, and it was a, like four discs connected together. Like maybe they, someone might have thought that this was flying in formation or something, but what I, from what I could see, it looked like it was a being that was using light to disguise itself, and it was flashing in and out in broad daylight, and the light that was emanating from it was intensely bright. And, you know, this was a camera shot that was on television, and like I said, it was in the early spring, 1994, that time frame, maybe you've heard of something like that, maybe.
So this is daylight video you saw?
Yeah, it was on the news. It was on broad daylight, and this thing was emanating the light so bright that it was, you could see it in the camera. It was just flashing really, really bright, you know, and but it was flashing in and out from light to darkness. And when you saw that dark part of it, it seemed like it was maybe not vehicles, but an entity or some kind of a thing that was connected together by, it was, you know, one thing that was using light for maybe like a cloak to like disguise itself, or, you know, it may not have been that far away from where they were shooting it from the camera, but the news crew was quite excited about it. It was in that area right there close to Las Vegas.
John, I'm sorry, I don't remember that story, but maybe Preston does. Does that ring a bell, Preston?
No, not in particular, but, you know, it doesn't surprise me. There's a lot of cases of involving unexplained lights. I think that's the most common type of a UFO encounter. And yeah, UFOs are all about the lights and showing themselves off and flashing these incredible lights. They know a lot more, I think, about the electromagnetic spectrum than we do.
I'll tell you what, John, I don't remember that case, but I'll poke around and see if I can find a record of it. In 1994, I think there was another case from Nellis Air Force Base. It was a video of supposedly sort of a, it was a flying saucer type vehicle that Nellis jets were chasing, and they captured video on their gun cameras, I guess, or some kind of camera that was on the plane. So that was the same sort of general time frame, but I don't remember the one you're talking about. If I can find it out, you send me an email and I'll try to get back to you. Time for, we'll try to get one more call in west of the Rockies, Joel in Long Beach. Hi, you're on with Preston Dennett.
Thank you so much, gentlemen. A quick story and my question. In 1971 to 73, I was out in the Cleveland National Forest, the edge of the desert. We were camping and climbing over a rocky mountain, jets out. And we stopped to rest, and we looked up, and in the sky there were three lights that were kind of glowy, and it was moving horizontal, kind of medium speed. And I focused my mind at it. Now, I can't say this really happened in terms of them, but I said, if you're in my mind, as strongly as I could possibly project, if you're really what I think I'm looking at, you should be able to show me something and do a right-angle turn. And a second later, they zipped straight across horizontally, went straight up, 12 o'clock, and disappeared.
Wow, that's amazing. But you know what, Preston, you have stories like that, like what Joel is describing, don't you? You have a couple of accounts like that?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, that's something I hear quite a bit. I just recently had a case very much like that. UFOs will respond to people's thoughts. They're very telepathic, the UFO occupants. This is how they communicate. And that's called a kind of a close encounter of the fifth kind, where they're reacting to something that you do. So, yeah, that's a really good example of it.
Yeah, I mean, that's it's hard to believe. I mean, it's hard to swallow that when you say, yeah, I'm going to think about flying saucers. I'm going to vector them in if there's any out there. And then they do what you want them to do. That's, you know, you tell that to some skeptic or somebody who doesn't deal with ufology, it's really hard to swallow.
Yeah, you're kind of stuck with the cases, though, because they begin to add up. And you're like, well, what am I going to do with this? You either deny the evidence or, you know, accept it.
I want to try to get one more story from you in. We got about 2 minutes. You tell a story in the book UFOs Over Nevada about cat people. Can you remember enough about that to give us a thumbnail sketch?
Oh, sure, yeah. That's one of the many cases in which people have had, you know, face-to-face encounters with ETs. And this involved a couple I believe it was Las Vegas, who saw these entities, which they described looking very much like cats, except they were humanoid figures, but otherwise had cat-like faces with very large dark eyes, and kept coming into their home. They had the UFOs hovering over their house. They try to photograph it, and the UFO would disappear right when they try to photograph it. And events came to a head one evening when they had a very uncomfortable evening. The wife didn't sleep well at all, and the husband had a very clear memory of these ETs coming through the wall and standing around his bed. And he was actually able to order them away, and which they did. They went away, disappeared, and but it really upset him bad enough where he couldn't even talk about it, you know, for quite a while there.
And there was part of that story that led to Howard Hughes. I mean, some documents that if in 1992, you say a series of events occurred that caused the cat people to come marching back because of some documents related to George Crockett, who was the guy for whom our airport was named. And
right, right. And yeah, and she's looking through these documents and saw that some apparently referred to saucer research and underground installations and a huge black budget and things like this, which was all new to her. I mean, this whole UFO thing was absolutely new to her.
Hey, we're going to have to talk more about that sometime, Preston. I hope to see you on the trail. I enjoyed the book, and I look forward to future work that you do.
Well, thanks very much. Appreciate
thanks
the opportunity.
Very much. UFOs Over Nevada is the name of his latest book. Check it out if you get a chance. Thanks also to my earlier guest, Mark Allen of AboveTopSecret.com, and to my stalwart colleagues there at Coast to Coast, Tricia Pepe, Nathan Staten, Dan Galante, our webmaster, Lex Lonehood, and producer, Chris Boros. My name is George Knapp, and I'll be back next Sunday night. Good night, everyone.